I stick around like hockey. Now what the puck? Cooler than off. Maneuver like Vancouver Canucks in your speaker. Destroy your woofer mids and tweeters. Not Wolverine, but still I hold claws like Jamaica. Water boys get slaughtered automatic like Bobby Boucher. Push your wig back like Marv Albert's toupee. Blaze the trail like Portland on a track that'll amaze ya. Omnipotent on the D like Clyde, Frazier, slide, Frazier, glide. Get off the I'm coming with the
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of
it's
I Want More Comics podcast. I'm Richie.
I'm Zach.
I'm amused.
And I'm going to get through this. So, it's 45. We're obviously experts at this now. So why don't we move right into the news?
Oh yeah, we're really
experts. Totally experts.
So in the news, we're just going to talk about some of the stuff that happened this past week. Sad news here, Rich Buckler, one of the creators of All-Star Squadron and Deathlok, passed away this past week. He's a big creator back in the day. You've seen his stuff on tons of, Bronze Age kind of comics.
Absolutely.
So, it's a bummer that he has passed on. But
it's really rough.
Yeah. Also, this just announced just a day ago, The Runaways, because of the new TV show, we're getting a new comic book series from Marvel Comics.
Oh.
To tie in with the TV show.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty cool.
Who's working on it? Do we know?
Not yet. Okay. They just announced that they're going to do it. And with the new TV show coming from Hulu, I believe, that's going to be a perfect time to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Both The Runaways and The Gifted look really interesting. So
yeah, they do. And then the other news was that Marvel is going to be putting on a one-shot for Rogue One about how Cassian met K2SO.
Okay.
And how they... Who's doing that? I did not see who they're doing it. They just, again, that's early announcement.
That's awesome.
Thing.
I'm down.
Yeah, I think that's going to be fun. I love it that they do these little side stories that aren't pivotal to the main, you know, movies or anything, but still are, how did C-3PO get his arm?
Right.
And made it red, and how did these guys meet?
Anything that enriches the lore, I'm in for, so...
Yeah.
Just always build...
Absolutely.
Because you can use that in arguments for continuity.
That's right.
And that's what it's all about,
met.
Isn't it?
How do you know? I read the comic book.
That's right.
And then, of course, we'll get into our stuff that we're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tomorrow, we're going to be doing our I Want More Comics book club.
Yep.
So,
whenever is this one?
Four.
What were the other book clubs?
So the first one we did was,
Memories.
Yeah. We three. Yep.
Astro City.
That's right.
And Meta Barons. It's only been three.
We did We Three.
There's something in between We Three and Astro City.
Yes, there was. We did We Three.
Well, we got that you did We Three.
Yeah, no, Astro City. We also did. What did we do?
That's
we
awesome.
Talked about the art. No, that was Gary. No.
Yeah. What? Yeah, because there's only
you totally threw us off.
Criminal.
There it
there
is.
There you go.
It's Criminal. Yeah, we did Criminal.
That was fun.
Well. My head hurts.
So this is four then.
It's four.
This is going to be the fourth book club.
Yeah.
Are you guys that fried?
We're fried. Awesome. Yes.
Yeah, we are fried. So the next book club book that we're
that's all right. I didn't remember it was Criminal. I love that book.
The next book club book that we're going to be doing is going to be Mystery Men.
Yeah.
By Marvel Comics.
By the gentleman Sean.
Exactly. Written by David Liss, art by Patrick Zercher.
And I picked a Marvel comic.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's a really cool, old school, throwback 1940s superheroes, but a story told in today's world.
So 1940s mentality with today's consequence.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really good book. It's one trade paperback.
It's perspective issues, too.
Yeah, it's one trade paperback. Again, we have them here on sale.
Well, you can get them on. That's kind of why we picked it, was because a few people were talking about how we've picked a lot with like runs. Like Criminal has a run. Meta Barons has a huge library with the Humanoids publications.
We3 is its own thing.
We3 was a one shot, but yeah. Astro City as well had a full run. So we thought we'd go back to a one shot and show people a complete story, so we could really dive into that. And those.
Well, and I picked like 6 or 7 books, but they could all be considered the same thing. They could be considered wrapped up in the one book.
Exactly.
And that's kind of why I went through and dug and picked my picks that I...
Right.
So where we could pull this book from, so...
Mm-hmm. And it is interesting to pick something up and then get the full story and then kind of talk about what that story meant to the reader. So I'm really interested in this week's. So hopefully people listening were at that. And
this is going to be a very...
It's going to be interesting. I think it'll be polarizing.
It's
going
to
be
very polarizing.
Yeah. It's going to be very polarizing. I have to prepare myself for all the mentalities, which is going to be fun. Again... Yeah,
that's what makes good book conversations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's the whole reason to do a book club.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want everybody on the same side going, yeah, that was really great, I really liked it. Yeah, that was really great, I really liked it. Yeah, that was really great, I really liked it. All right, book club's over. That's boring.
Hand out.
Yep. So when you got people that don't agree with you and then people that are maybe find it subversive or maybe people that are not into the art, or you're going to get, this is going to be probably... You're probably going to get the most diverse reaction out of this
book. I think so, too.
So,
And again, the way that we run it here, if you're local to us, is we have copies of the book available. You can pick them up anytime from now till the next book club, which will be the last Thursday in June. If you're a walk-in, it's going to be 25% off cover price. If you are a Holdslot member with us here in the store, it's 30% off. You don't need to buy the book to come in and join. You can, you know, read it on Comixology.
You just
want to
learn about something maybe you want to read.
Yeah.
You can come in and sit in on the discussion and hear about maybe this will interest you and maybe you won't.
That'll be the 29th of June.
29th of June. Yep. So
is that this Thursday or no?
That's this Thursday.
Okay. So it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're doing Meta Barons.
When you're hearing this future. It's
in the future,
like in
that'll
the
be last. Yeah, 2 weeks ago, a week ago.
Yeah, exactly. We have started to do something. I don't know how many we've done now. I've lost count.
We're at 4.
You don't even know.
On the stream sale?
I want to say we're at 4.
I think we're more than that. But
might have just done our 5th.
I think that sounds right. We do a stream sale on Facebook on our page from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time every Friday night. We do a stream sale, which is basically we do a Facebook Live video. We put out comic books, trade paperbacks, just all different kinds of geeky fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We put a price on it, and if you want to buy it, you can just comment that you want to buy it, and you can pick it up. We ship. It's a crazy fun time.
The best part about this is that this is the only place that you can see Dr. Deals.
This is the only place you can see Dr. Deals.
Or the surfing salesman.
The surfing salesman, yeah.
Only place. You gotta catch them there live.
Yes,
because they're very elusive, and you don't see them outside.
Yeah. Exactly.
Besides the fact that it's just an incredibly unique experience, we know that people that come in the comic shop don't exactly have all the time in the world to just kind of look through the back issues and kind of find hidden gems, and we kind of do that for you here. So on Facebook Live on Friday at 6 p.m., we just kind of look all week long. Zach tries to find great books and titles that we think people would love to have in their collections, and we show them off to you, and then all of a sudden you're sitting at home and looking through some, you know, really finding some really key finds in a comic shop right from your couch. So
yep, exactly.
That's a really unique and engaging experience, and we'd love to have you. It's on Facebook Live, so if you have Facebook, you're already able to do it. Just gotta follow I Want More Comics.
Way there.
Exactly.
Like slide into the 80s balance.
And you know, follow us on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I Want More Comics.
Yep.
Right. And and we have an Instagram page as well, so we're everywhere on the internet.
That's right. So
definitely check us out.
Hopefully we'll see you Friday.
Absolutely.
The other thing is that's live. And it can get crazy.
It can. So, it really
and sometimes
can.
Technology kicks them in the butt.
That's right.
So just bear with them.
So with that, I think we should slide into our picks of the week.
Boom.
Excellent. I want to go first this time.
Oh,
no,
goodness.
You can't.
I never go first.
You know what? I think Zach should go first.
All right.
I'm going to veto that.
So
I'm the host of the show right now.
I don't
that's
care.
Right. That's right.
I pay you.
I want to do it once, guys.
You pay me to host? I'm hosting.
I want to do this once.
Go for it.
So my pick from last week was Neil Gaiman's American Gods, number 3. This is the third
was
part.
Was it my pick number 1 when it originally came out?
Number 1 was your pick.
Yeah.
Passing the torch.
Well, pretty much. I just recently reread the book to get ready for the TV show. I hadn't read it in 15 years or however long it was.
Has it been 15 years?
It came out in 2001.
Wow.
So, so I reread that because I wanted to watch the TV show.
Yep.
I wanted to, after I reread the book, and I've been watching the TV show, which I've really enjoyed. I highly recommend that as well. I reread my comics going into this issue number 3. Because I went, oh yeah, now I, you know, have just read the book, and the adaptation is a very good adaptation. I think it's, mm-hmm. I think it's very good. The artwork is crazy and wacky, and it fits really well with the story. It's like I said, seeing the similarities. One of the things I noticed too with this, because I hadn't read the book when I read the first 2 issues of this, is that this is going to be like The Stand or something. There's going to be like 60 issues for this novel, because up to issue 3 we're on like page 20 or 30 of a 600 page book. So I went, oh, okay. So the official name of it is called Shadows,
right?
Which is about Shadow. And yeah, okay, yeah, it's gonna be awesome when all these are together. Mm-hmm. When I read number 3, I said, oh yeah, this is gonna be fun when there's a big omnibus with all 70 issues or whatever it's gonna be.
Which is kind of what you want when you do take a novelization into a comic book. You want to have as much detail as you possibly can. You don't necessarily need to lose a ton of transfers from each, you know, each yeah. medium. So
yeah, and I think that you know, seeing the TV show and how they take the book and how they want to represent it, and seeing how the comic book, you know, wants to represent it, and seeing that both of them are doing the exact same scenes, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. So I, you know, again, I think my pick is based on you know, of everything. Reading the right. book, the TV
out.
Show, and reading the comic and going, oh, this is really cool to see the exact same moment. It's not a spoiler, it's on the cover, but with Shadow in the motel room talking to somebody, you know, seeing how they're handling it. It's pretty cool to see that happening at once.
Yeah.
Because with the Dark Tower or Anita Blake or Game of Thrones or whatever, they've done other adaptations, but it's always been a year after, 5 years after, a year before the TV show came out, whatever it is.
And, right, that's a really unique experience to kind of enjoy all these at the same time.
Yes.
So.
Exactly. So, yeah, if you're a Neil Gaiman fan, you gotta pick it up. If you like American Gods, it's a good adaptation.
It's definitely my favorite Neil Gaiman story.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So you should be picking this up. It's super hard to keep in the store.
Yeah.
I tried to reorder all of them.
Yeah, so so if you see it, definitely buy it.
Excellent pick. I like it.
All right.
Muy excelente.
You want to go or you want me to go?
We can Rochambeau for it.
Okay, I'll go.
I get to go first.
Okay. So I picked Rose number 2.
Ah, very good.
Another pick that Sean picked number 1 of.
Mm-hmm.
This time I got to jump on it and kind of pick my own. So, again, the story, Meredith Finch
yep.
is husband to David Finch.
Wife.
Or wife to David Finch. This is how good I am. She could be husband. It doesn't, yeah, I was going to say.
That's true, that's true.
Judge them.
Progressive, you never know.
Yeah.
But
yeah, she's good.
Meredith Finch is actually super nice. And the story here is really kind of growing. The second one's more about building the world that they're in and kind of dealing with the consequences of having magic and really showing off the powers of the main character. I can't say enough about, and I, what did we decide how to say this name? Is it Ig?
Yeah, Ig Guerra.
Guerra, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ig's artwork to me, it hints at Capullo.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
I like this stylization. When I look at it, I see a little bit of Seven to Eternity. I wouldn't say...
No,
or not Seven to Eternity.
This is definitely a
Reborn.
Fantasy book.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's definitely a fantasy book like Seven to Eternity.
Yeah.
It's right in that realm.
Mm-hmm. I think the coloring in Seven to Eternity is better.
It's definitely.
Yeah.
It's a different
right.
take.
But, like, Reborn's also fantasy, and I see that in this a lot.
Yeah.
But, like I said, there's more storytelling in this. There's a lot of, and to be honest, there's still a lot of mystery behind the villain.
Yeah.
So I can't wait for issue 3, but it has definitely captured my imagination. And as fantasy books go, it's easy for me as top 3.
It's great.
Right next to Reborn and Seven to Eternity for me. So
yeah, it's a good time right now if you're a fantasy fan.
Yeah, legit.
You know, throughout the years, a lot of Image or, you know, what other different comic companies have done a lot of sci-fi, but now we're starting to really get some good fantasy ongoing books, not just miniseries or one shots or anything like that. So yeah, I agree.
Well, just pure fantasy. There's not.
A lot.
You have to dig deep in the independent world to find something that's pure fantasy. Mm-hmm. And even then, it's hard to find because, unfortunately, sometimes that stuff doesn't sell that well, so then it doesn't stay in print. So, you know, but some of these books coming out now, they're holding their own.
Yeah,
and they're doing good.
Yeah, well, like you said, Rose and Seven to Eternity, I lump in the... the story is good, is why you should buy it, but the art is also why you should buy it.
Yeah.
And when you hit both those boxes... I think that's an instant buy.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, and the thing I'm getting with all three of the fantasy titles that I'm reading is that it's about world building.
Yeah.
Fantasy comes with understanding the world that you're playing in or, you know, understanding that sandbox. And if you know all the rules to the playground, you can have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So the first couple, I believe, are just going to be storytelling on the world that we're in. And then we're going to get into some real... I think we're going to get into some real...
meat and potatoes.
Consequences and falling off the edge of entertainment. So, excellent pick.
Falling off the edge of entertainment.
I think.
It's an interesting way to put it.
You know, where you don't have control, you're just like, oh God, this is so great. You know, that kind of stuff. So, flailing arms and such.
12-year-old Japanese fangirl.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
You never fanned out before?
Not quite like that.
Not like that.
I just
had your moment.
I've seen you watch Twin Peaks.
You haven't seen me watch Twin Peaks. You've never seen me unless you've been outside my window watching into my house, you creepy bastard.
You have a beautiful home. So, why don't you tell us your pick instead of picking on me?
I'm not picking on you. We're fighting.
We're fighting.
That leads right into my pick.
What is that?
So Invincible is my pick.
Oh.
Which number?
And I this one is 136.
136.
And we're winding down on this book.
I was going to say, it's coming up.
Oh, man.
I think there's only 8 more issues left of this book. This is probably still my favorite superhero book of all time.
I
absolutely love this book.
Yeah, if you...
It's a Kirkman book. I honestly think that I've picked a different issue for a pick
you have
before.
Yeah.
And I try to not do that much, but man.
If you love something, you love it. And
honestly, this is making me want to hunt down Ryan Ottley work and buy original pages.
Sure, right,
and I'm really sad that I think I just need to contact him directly and be like, dude, I need this. I need this to live.
Yes. Well, it's one of those things where I think all three of us here agree. And if you are listening,
not to be punny, but Robert Kirkman doesn't pull any punches.
He doesn't. No.
On his book.
No. Well,
so
it's just
straight up amazing, amazing stuff.
It is, and I think the reason why you've picked it a couple times, and the reason why it comes up every once in a while is just as many people who've been reading Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Should be reading this book. It's not
like superheroes. You should be reading this book, period.
If you like superheroes at all, I think it's a pickup. Like,
well, yeah, and I mean, it's so good how he does the story. Ryan Ottley's art. I mean, yeah.
The permanence of this universe is what Cap, you know, really.
Well, it's just as permanent as anything that happens in The Walking Dead.
Right. It really changes the way I read certain comics in DC or Marvel, you know, because in this, the consequences, and we've said it several times, but they're legit. If something happens here, Kirkman wants to see, like, what happens when DC and Marvel make this weird move of, like, Infinite Crisis, and what if that actually happens and there were actual consequences that stuck, you know?
Yeah.
And the world has to kind of adapt to that.
Yep.
But then also understand the world they live in and kind of... It almost turns it into kind of like a New York mentality where if you're in New York and you see a lot of crazy things in the street, it almost doesn't bother you anymore. It's the same thing when I read Invincible. Some of the characters aren't affected by incredible feats because they've been experiencing for so long.
Yeah, we need to do a whole episode just on Invincible. But anyway, continue.
That will come, I think, at the end when we can.
Oh, yeah, when it wraps up. When you hit issue 144, which should be the final issue.
We can sit and read it from 1 till 144. How cool is that going to be? Anyway.
Yeah, it's going to make me want to reread the whole entire thing.
I am rereading the entire thing. I've started. I'm taking Megan through it so her and I can.
She's going to have emotions.
I know. It's the whole point.
So, what about this issue you loved?
So it feels like this is happening faster than it should, and it might be like the story's wrapping up faster. It feels like to me, it feels like he could actually tell the story through another 20 issues.
Sure.
But I think Kirkman is really is at a point where he's like, I love these characters, but I don't know where else to go after this, and I don't want to have it end on a low note. So I think he's ending it on, you know, this is a high right here. So we're going to end it here. And you know, this is the end of the story.
Right.
Which, I love that when stories end, but this one's particularly hitting me in the guts a little bit because it's so ridiculously good. But they're doing the final confrontation with the Vultramites, which is
so insane,
so brutal. I mean, there's a 2-page spread here.
Yeah.
And I would love to own these original pieces.
I just want it so bad.
I do. I want it really bad. I want this as bad as there was an original page I wanted in Lady Killer, and it's already gone.
Yeah.
I tried to buy it, and it was already gone. I was like, that would have been an amazing page. But I don't know that I'm going to be able to ever afford this. It's just, it's such a good page because you see the scope of the Vultramite army coming to attack and the way it's drawn and looks. I mean, it looks menacing. It looks like this is it. We are,
we are
in some trouble.
Pack up, kids. It's done.
And it's like right at the beginning of this issue, but then you see what happens after this and it just blew me away. This book is just so good. Every time I read it, I love reading Walking Dead because there's definitely feelings and emotions and you lose a character, it's permanent and it hurts. This one's kind of similar to that.
Yep.
But there's also a hell of a lot more fun. Like, this one's a much more lighthearted book.
Right.
Even though some of the stuff is dire, it's a much more lighthearted book than Walking Dead ever will ever be.
Absolutely.
So, if you've never read Invincible, you really need to. You really, really need to.
Yes, you're listening right now.
For TV watchers, it's kind of like Scrubs. You know, where they have that lightheartedness of it, but then there's these serious things that happen.
Oh, yeah.
It's real devastating.
Oh, yeah.
I think it makes it more devastating.
Yeah, because you're having such a good time, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, ow. Well, ow.
There's certain things in here, like, I love, there's a couple issues where Mark, the main character, ends up getting transported to the Marvel Universe, and he hangs out with Spider-Man for a day.
Yeah.
This was when Kirkman was writing a little bit for Marvel.
Yeah.
He ends up taking his character into the Marvel U because he gets put there by one of the villains, and he's like,
so unimaginative.
I gotta get back to this other my place, you know?
Yeah.
Or like, there's a monster and a monster girl and robot get put into an alternate universe where they've lived for seriously thousands of years there.
Right.
And they come back completely changed.
Mm-hmm.
But in this world, it seems like they were only gone for like a week or something.
Yeah.
So he does such crazy things in this book. It's so good.
Want to reread all this right now.
All right, we're going to cancel the podcast. We're going to read Invincible.
We're just going to go read Invincible. Sorry.
But great pick. Yeah. I think that if you are a collector, it's a must. And
If you're looking for something, if you're ever sitting around and you're going, hey, I want to get into something, you know, what should I get into? What new superhero? What new book or something? And you haven't been reading Invincible, you have to read Invincible.
You have to at least get the first two trades.
Yep, the first 12 issues.
If it doesn't hook you by the first 12 issues, then it ain't going to be for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would question you seriously. you would have to explain to me how it didn't hook you.
Exactly.
I will point my crooked finger at you and yell shame.
Right. I would just need to. I have a huge
shame.
Just have a bell.
Shame. Exactly. So if you are ever just, because we hear it all the time, people are like, "Oh, I don't know what
I don't know what to read." If you're lost, pick this up.
Pick up Invincible.
I don't even care if you have to go to the library and like rent them all.
However you do it, just read Invincible.
Just read it. So good.
Great picks. I think that moves us straight into spinning the racks.
Get on up.
da-da-da, 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 da-da-da. Spinning the racks.
All right, so in spinning the racks today, we wanted to talk about...
They forced me.
Yes. We wanted to talk about comic book creators, mostly... Actually, all writers here who are famous now, who when you say, oh, Jeff Lemire, Scott Snyder.
Well, some of them are still even breaking ground to where they're just hitting that plateau.
Right. Where they're starting to get there.
Trying to get to the mass consciousness.
Mm-hmm. But some of these people who have been doing stuff for almost for 10 years, 10, 15 years. Right.
They've been before around. Now. And then they started off as smaller, independent stuff, or they started off at Image, or they started off at Dark Horse, or they started off, wherever they started off, it was a smaller publisher. Until they started writing like certain things for maybe the big two.
So
and some of these guys can still hold on to the credibility that they can still write independent stories and do big stuff.
Absolutely,
whatever.
Like it blows me away when writers, especially, are writing something like 7 comics in a month.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
Lemire.
Yeah. keeping all that separated and what you're trying to do is just crazy to me.
I agree. And the vast difference of that writing styles when it comes to each book, Matt Kent being one of them.
Well, Matt Kent and Jeff Lemire can definitely separate what they're doing.
Right. It's so good at that.
Hickman does it well.
Uh-huh.
Everything that Brian Wood writes is completely different than the last thing he wrote.
Right.
Yeah.
So. And it's really interesting how that voice can change so much.
Well, Kirkman's done it well for years too.
I would challenge that Alan Moore is not good at that. I think that Alan Moore's writing, when I get his voice in a lot of his pieces.
But Alan Moore is really good at taking things that you already know and making you look at it from a different angle.
And right, yeah.
So.
But that's what I'm saying is that voice is always there, and it's not the case with a lot of these writers where you could say, you know, that's Matt Kent, right? And you'd be like, what? You know?
Yeah.
So,
and the reason why we decided to do this for Spinning the Racks is I've had a lot of customers come in recently, especially with Lemire.
Yes.
Who've come in and said, I really, really like Lemire's work right now. I really like him on, you know, AD, or I like him on whatever he's writing or doing or drawing or Royal City, or, you know, like his work is, it's really, really good. And I'm like, well, have you read this stuff? Have you read, you know, have you gone Sweet back Tooth. And you read Did you Sweet read Tooth? Did you read, you know, Essex County? Did you go back and read these early works of his? And they're like, I didn't even know that he did stuff before this.
This isn't his first one?
Yeah, no. Exactly. So, I mean, that's why we decided to talk about this in the podcast.
So
maybe these are creators that you've heard of recently, or you've heard of forever ago, and maybe you don't know that they've done other work.
Yeah, exactly. So
why don't we start with Mr. Lemire?
Yeah, I was just going to say
that's Lemire, not Lemire.
Yeah.
Listening.
So I've never heard Lemire.
So Jeff Lemire,
he's from Canada. He has a really cool story that he told many years ago at San Diego Comic Con when I saw him and Scott Snyder interview each other, which was awesome. And this was back in the day when Scott Snyder was still the new guy on Batman.
Right.
And Jeff Lemire was and Jeff Lemire was the up and coming guy as well. He'd done some stuff for DC. As well, and he said that he would work as a cook in a kitchen, and then every day he would come home and draw and try and make comic books till late into the middle of the night, and he would do that 6 days a week until he got good enough to get published.
Mm-hmm.
So he's real committed, and the big thing, the first thing that he did was for Top Shelf, and that's going to be Essex County.
And this was his first big body of work.
Big book, yeah.
This is the first thing he did where he drew it, he wrote it. You know, and Lemire's art is very... you kind of got to be into it.
Right.
It's a different art style.
Mm-hmm. I think that the stories that he tells when they're personal, that it fits...
The images work completely with the stories that he tells that are small press or personal or...
Yeah.
Anything
do
like
you
that.
Want it to be the art on a Superman book? No. But do you want it to be about hometown people? Like, Essex County is about a family in Canada.
It's three different generations, I think.
Yeah, three different generations. And it's all centered around the family drama. And, of course, since it's Canada... There's a hockey bent to it, you know, and it's a real personal slice of life story. There's not superheroes, there's not explosions and guns. It's all a drama, and his art does work for that quite a bit.
Yeah, I was gonna say it definitely when it comes to that like the humble story.
Yes.
Something that's really attacking you at the heart versus, you know, your typical explosion.
Yeah.
His artwork's really warm to that.
Yeah.
It really can guide it. And it would be very jarring to see it in anything else, to be honest.
Yeah. So they collected this whole thing.
I'm trying to picture like a huge, like, well, I mean, an AD after death. Like,
well, and he also did like Trillium and stuff like that.
Yeah, Trillium.
Trillium's excellent.
Yeah, but anyway, so you can get Essex County in one trade paperback volume, the entire thing.
Like
the
Bone Tome. Yeah, you can get it in one.
That's the best way to get it. One that went really under the radar. I got it as soon as it came out because I absolutely love the story. Is the Nobody. That is Jeff Lemire's take on the Invisible Man. It was a graphic novel.
Surprisingly, that's actually one of the only ones I haven't read.
Yeah, it's a graphic novel he did for Vertigo Comics. It's just
2009.
Yep, and he did a. It's just him doing Invisible Man, his take, which I love that story. That's one of my favorite.
So my assumption stuff. Is it takes a more personal approach.
Yeah.
Invisible Man.
Yes, exactly.
It's real, like. You know,
he goes for the heart and the hell of everything.
It's very heart and very.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's doing science fiction, superheroes,
life, death.
Well, even when he's doing Animal Man, yeah. He was doing the breakdown of what it was to be.
Yes,
Animal Man. So a huge one.
And then the big one that I think got at least Sean and I were picking it up every month and talking about it was Sweet Tooth from Vertigo Comics.
Excellent, excellent book. But I have to tell you, you do have to be in the right state of mind to read it.
You really do,
because it is not a happy story.
It is not. It ran for 40 issues.
I will say the payoff is excellent in that book.
Yeah, it was really good.
40 issues.
40 issues. Yep, they're bringing them out in these beautiful hardcovers that just recently wrapped up three of them. They're also going to be doing trade paperbacks, so you can get the whole thing in three trades. It's
nice.
It's going to be really good. And then he went and he started working for DC Comics. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to somebody the other day about this, and they said, "Oh, he's done stuff for DC." And I mean, he's done
Animal
stuff.
Animal Man's one of them.
Animal Man was his big thing, mm-hmm. But he's done. He did the Brightest Day Adam one shot, which I remember reading, which I thought was pretty cool. He did some stuff in Adventure Comics. He took over on Justice League Dark. Uh-huh. He did Frankenstein Agent of Shade. I mean, he did some little bit of a run on Green Arrow. So, I mean, you know, he did a lot of stuff there for DC. And the Swamp Thing with Scott Snyder and Animal Man, that's a great run to read side by side as well.
And I think that's what caused them to get later on to do AD. It's because both of them were working on those books, but those books intertwined so heavily that it was kind of a no-brainer. I think they sat down and said, "Hey, I have this idea for this. That's a great idea." I think they were probably sat down in a bar. I'm guessing here.
I can't even imagine.
But they had a conversation,
about
breaking down this craziness of
Snyder
AD after death.
And Lemire just like... talking just
that's a great idea. What if we did this aspect of it? Have you thought about it from this angle? And it just got bigger and bigger until
just
they broke it down,
just started growing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the current works he's doing right now that I really enjoy is Black Hammer. I love Hammer. Yeah. That is such a good superhero / sci-fi take.
And Black Hammer, again, incredibly different from his current AD after death.
Completely different.
Just
a Royal City.
Royal City. Such a different take. Descender. Again.
That's heavy sci-fi concepts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, I mean, currently, like we're talking about,
Descender reminds me of that. What was it? AI?
I haven't heard much
movie.
About Descender. So what is...
It's about a robotic boy who gets woken up, and he was kind of created to kind of be a companion to families or to
like AI artificial.
It is really kind of like that. Okay. But there's more space opera.
There's much more to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And everybody's trying to hunt this boy down.
Yeah.
And it's. Hmm.
So, recently he's been doing stuff for Marvel. He's actually wrapping up a lot of stuff with Marvel. Old Man Logan, he did Moon Knight for a while, Extraordinary X-Men, Thanos. He jumped around a lot at Marvel as well, which is another reason.
Between the X-Books.
Huh? Yeah, Extraordinary X-Men.
It was Extraordinary, okay.
Yeah, and he also been doing Old Man Logan up until recently. But I think the Marvel stuff and the Valiant stuff is when he started getting you know.
He started getting noticed heavy.
Yeah. You know, he did Bloodshot Reborn for Valiant.
Killed it.
He did The Valiant for Valiant Entertainment. Mm-hmm. He is continuing to do Bloodshot. He's still the writer on some of the one-shots and the new stuff coming up. As we said before, he's doing Descender for the Image, Black Hammer. He did AD Plutonia. That was another miniseries he did. So, I mean, his stuff is, it's all over the place. He does different stuff. He can write, as, you know, talking about here, right here, he can do DC, Marvel. Some of it's at Dark Horse, some of it's at Image, some of it's at Valiant. So, I mean,
some of it's his own self-published John and Carly stuff.
Yep. So. The Underwater Welder was another one that came out that he brought out from Top Shelf a little bit later. Uh-huh. He still puts out stuff that is personal to him. It's not just these big books. So he is awesome. I remember reading him. I remember hearing about Essex County from a podcast back in the day. Mm-hmm. Checking that out. The Nobody came out, you know, got that, thought that was awesome. And Sweet Tooth really cemented him as a must-read creator for me. And ever since then, so for the last 7 years, if it says his name on it, I'm going to give it a shot.
I always give it a read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's do someone else. Let's move into...
Well, I think he naturally lends into... Yeah. Honestly, I think he lends into Matt Kent.
I was just going to say Matt Kent.
Because
I agree.
They're similar. The way they write are very similar. They can write bunch of different styles, and they're all pretty good.
And yeah, and a lot at the same time.
Yeah.
So many going on at the exact same time. Matt Kent also helped with Sweet Tooth a little bit.
Well, he's got a huge body of, like, independent work.
Oh, yeah.
Like, early stuff like Pistol Whip and Super Spy and stuff like that. Or when he combined Super Spy to make it the Two Sisters story. What was the Curious... what am I forgetting the title of that? The Curious Strange... No, the Red-Handed. A Curious... I'm screwing this title up so bad.
Which one?
It was Red-Handed. A Curious...
let's see.
Why can I not think of this? It's bothering the hell out of me. It was a one and done little hardcover book that he did. Like three story. He did three story.
Red Handed, The Fine Art of Strange
Crimes. There you go. Fine Art of Strange Crimes.
Yeah.
So he does like these little one off stories really, really well. The coolest thing that I found about Matt Kent, because I've met him and talked to him a few times, and every time I go to talk to him, I bring whatever the newest book is that he's doing.
Right.
And I have him sign it. You know, I bring a hardcover, and I'm like, yeah, you know, sign this. And he always does something crazy in the book.
Yeah,
the very first year that I brought him a book, what was it? It was...
was it The Tooth?
It was The Tooth.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I brought him The Tooth, and I set it in front of him. So he flips to this page, right? And on this one page, it's got like a little stamp on it. He cuts the stamp out of my book. Straight up cuts it out. And I was like, okay. And he starts telling me the story of when he was a little kid. I think he said that his brother had a Dazzler number one comic, and he wanted the coupon out of the back to subscribe to something else, like some X-Book or something like that. So he took his brother's comic book and he cut that out to send it in to subscribe to whatever Marvel book he wanted.
Right.
And he said his brother never forgave him for that. So to try to make it up to his brother, he specifically designed this book that if he ever got any kind of famous and people ever wanted an autograph from him or wanted it signed, that he designed the book to where he was going to cut this panel out, glue it to the front, do a little tiny sketch in the front in the panel, but it doesn't interrupt the story. The genius part of it is if you're reading it and you get to that part when the pages are laying flat, the next page he designed that panel so it actually fills in, but it also fills in when you turn
so
the
page.
So it's
both pages.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's crazy how he did that. So the first time I ever got it signed, I was like, what the hell are you doing? But I watched him do it and it was so cool.
That's crazy.
And then the next time he there was the Strange Crimes book, I brought that to him and he burned the page with a lighter. Oh. And it was a similar thing where he designed it to where once he burned it, it melted into the story with it being burned, made sense.
Mm.
But the next page was like woman's legs. But on the page before, it looked like this crazy weird design.
Oh,
but it's
wow.
The start of a woman's legs when you flip the book over. And then I brought him other books to get signed, and he would draw like these elaborate, like Mind Management, he drew this elaborate thing, this elaborate picture in the very front that's a whole other page, basically.
I don't know Matt Kent as an artist.
Yeah, that's like Department H ghost? Is him.
He's in the same boat as Lemire.
That's why he lends to Lemire, because if you like Lemire's style, you'll like Kent.
Kent, yeah.
They're similar. As, they're not the same as far
they're
as...
They're not.
Story-wise, they're very different.
But they're very esoteric as far as what they put out.
Yeah, and...
Matt Kents are not meta as much as they're straightforward, awesome stories. Like, just... driven by like
Revolver deals with a parallel universe,
right?
Like it deals with parallels of being a person who's well off, well to do, and then in this other alternate world it's like a post-apocalyptic world and you're walking the same streets and experiencing life in two different ways.
So good.
So it's the parallels of how you can experience life. It's a really great story.
That sounds really good.
That was another Vertigo. That's like when he first started kind of doing stuff for Vertigo. That was the first, I think, the first book he did for Vertigo. But he's been doing stuff for Dark Horse. He's done work with Valiant a lot.
Well, I was going to say is that that's where...
Because he did 4,180.
Well, so he's done...
He did Rye. He did Divinity. He's done...
Unity. He did 25 issues of that.
Right now, he's doing Exo.
Which is awesome.
Which is... He's knocking that so far out of the park.
It's fantastic.
It's Babe Ruth in that.
Oh, yeah. He pointed out and he just went...
Ninjak, the book you like.
I love his Ninjak stories. They're
well, it was really cool because when we went to Comics Pro, Keith and I sat down and talked to him. And the conversation we had with him was we basically asked him, so what is the difference between when you do your own work and you write it and draw it and everything? And he said, and then what's the difference between having to write the script and have somebody else draw it? And he said he basically has to work backwards. He has to have the whole story laid out and he has to keep breaking it down and breaking it down and breaking it down to where he can fit it in single issues. And he doesn't want to hinder the artist too much, but he kind of wants a certain flow on the page. So as long as he feels like he can convey that message and have the art come back and convey what he's trying to tell the story with, he's done his job.
He's done it.
But he has to break it down and like whittle parts out that he would put in, but he doesn't necessarily think... You know, he doesn't want to control anybody. Right. So
he takes out the detail that he would put in his illustration.
Right, and he lets them, come back with something.
Tell their part of their story.
So, and because he doesn't want to step on their feet.
Right,
that's
a hard thing to do.
So it's really interesting to hear how he does the two different things, because he can do it all if he wants to.
Of course.
You know, I'm really happy to, because I can't remember the artist's name. I'm so such a terrible person. I'm XO.
It's Thomas Gorillo.
Because his stuff is holy crap amazing in here. It makes me want to go back and read all the Conan stuff he was working on. Yep. That's how much I like it.
Yeah, it's so good.
He was working on Conan,
That story is so good. It's one of the first Valiants. Now, I love Ninjak, and I really do enjoy the stories from Ninjak, but it's always been my comic of like, oh, I'm going to read that when I get to it. But with the XOs that have come out, I get excited like I do with Batman or...
Well, I think that...
I haven't been a super huge XO fan up until this point.
Well, so here's the thing is that I'm a Valiant fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
I own at least one readable copy of everything that they've put out since they've restarted back in 2011. I think that what you're getting now is a book that... It takes time for a company to get to. They need time to tell their stories. They needed time to get there because they've definitely, with XO Manowar, I'm excited to read Rapture that just came out.
Yes.
But
again, Matt Kent.
But XO Manowar, they're taking it to a different level. With art and with story and even the way that they make the book. So you're absolutely right. I will say that you should be reading XL. This is a great time to jump on. You don't need to read the other stuff.
Nope.
But the way that they're doing it right now is I think that XL, and I'm pretty sure it's going to go this way, but if it continues on this level of quality, which I'm pretty sure it will, it's going to be you should be reading this along with Seven to Eternity, Batman,
absolutely,
whatever other books you want to put, Saga, whatever you want to put up
on
there.
This, then you're behind.
Yes,
where other comics you'd be like, I got to get caught up.
You should
on
read that. Yeah,
this you should know already.
You should be getting this book right now.
And
shame on you.
Shame. Where's my belt?
I got.
And again, Matt Kent writing this incredible story of XO that has XO, which is a character that's been around long enough to grab each one of us, hasn't really, and with Matt Kent's drive behind that, capture this.
Well, so. I think Kent's on the cusp of being something like Lemire is now.
Yeah,
I think he's right there. He's at the high water mark where he's getting ready to crest and come in.
Yeah.
So
I agree. I can't wait for people to be like, who's this Matt Kent guy? I'd be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it actually surprised me that I've had, and it's been only the last 2 to 3 months, I've had so many people come in and ask me about Lemire.
Lemire, right.
Which I'm like, okay, what? Well...
because we've been talking about this for years.
Yeah, I'm like, you like Lemire now? Okay, well...
And it might be because I come to the shop so often that Lemire is like a name
right.
for me. Like,
but I have to walk the store with these people and go, okay, so there's this, and they're just like, oh my God, I didn't know there was so much stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's been doing stuff for a while.
Right. And that's the whole reason for the podcast. So, Matt Kent, excellent writer. If you're reading anything Valiant, you probably love his work and you just don't know it. What would you say? I think we've gone over a few of the older ones. Anything else you want to add before I move to the next
guy?
For
now, that's okay.
Okay.
I mean, definitely look him up. Yeah, he's doing Department he's H right now for...
Depth, if you want.
Or Depth, yeah.
For Dark Horse.
For Dark Horse. So he's still out there. He's always doing... You can go right now and buy some of Matt Kent's, and you should.
And it's all available. Any store should have it all.
Yeah. I think we should, just really quickly, because honestly, his work is not a lot that's older, but Scott Snyder.
Yeah.
Because...
See, I was going to go into Brian Wood.
Well, I mean, bro,
he's another artist,
let's,
writer
let's
guy.
Let's move right into Brian Wood, then. That's fine.
Okay, we can't. Scott Snyder has, like, three things before that, though. But that's...
Yeah, he broke early.
Yes, he did.
So... So Brian Wood is one of those writers, kind of like Kirkman, kind of like the other two, where he can absolutely tell completely different stories. Mm-hmm. Everything he does is a complete breakaway from anything he's ever done,
right.
And he researches the hell out of whatever the hell it is he's writing, mm-hmm. And I love that about him. Right. So when he first came out, God, what was some of his early work? He did Local really early.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
He did DMZ really early. He did. Demo was another early piece for him.
DMZ's probably the one I read.
The DMZ, the Militarized Zone. Uh-huh. So, I mean, these are all books that are completely different takes on completely different subjects.
Right.
Like Northlanders. Like, the first time I really paid attention, honestly, actually, I liked Supermarket. That was my favorite Brian Wood early on.
I don't think
Supermarket was a 4-issue series, and the reason I liked it, so like, what caught me about it so much is you talk about coloring in 7 to Eternity.
Yes.
The coloring in that book was completely ridiculously visceral in Supermarket.
Okay.
So, and it's very much a Romeo Juliet kind of story. Two people that shouldn't be in love are in love from two different warring worlds.
Factions or whatever. Yeah.
So, but the colors and the way the art was done, that's what sucked me in at first. And then I read the story and I was like, oh, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's always had a knack for finding artists that fit really well with what he's trying to do.
Agreed. Woods love is, and always will be, The Massive, which is...
The Massive. That's such a weird one to say.
I know, it's a weird one. The Massive is one of those books that I like to suggest to people that I know that they may not grab onto it, but it's for the people that do like that scenario.
To me, The Massive was like Waterworld done better.
It's super Waterworld done better. That's all it is. That's why I like it so much. I like the concept.
Like Waterworld actually done good.
Right.
So if you remember the blowout of a horrible movie that was Waterworld, is what happens when you do it correctly.
When you can actually take a really great concept and do a really great story with it.
Yeah.
I like the concept of a Peace Corps.
You need to read Northlanders.
Northlanders is awesome.
It's Viking Tales.
Yeah. Okay.
Like straight, yes. And the genius behind that is when that was coming out, each story arc was centered on a different set of people,
mm-hmm.
and what was going on.
But yeah, when you said research, that's all I think about when I think about Brian Wood, is how much research that guy does.
How much he puts into everything.
Yeah, because and the back of his book for like Massive, the amount of stuff he gives you, and because they're all like ops. Peace Corps ops and stuff, and then he gives you files and dossiers on those ops, and then the history of those ops and what those actually lended to.
Well, when you spend that much time looking stuff up to put your in your book, you're going to want to include some of your source material too.
None of it had to do with the story, but it always added to the flavor of the world, so he's really good at that, really good at embracing, and he has been since forever. DMZ was the same. Just
the demilitarized zone of what if Manhattan breaks off from the government and decides to be its own sovereign state.
Boom.
And then you're following a reporter who ends up getting placed in there, and he's just trying to survive the DMZ and trying to learn all the different things about it and how people react and live each day. So it's a completely different story compared to anything else.
So different. And what Woods does great is like it feels like he understands the push of, you know, social economics and
actually,
politics.
Thinking it now, the only other story I can think of that's kind of similar to DMZ is Briggsland.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of similar.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, you have your...
That's the one that's coming out now, is Briggs Lands.
Yeah, and that's the one actually that got optioned for a TV show and the whole line, and the story is really, really done.
When we're really going to start hearing about Brian Wood.
Like, militia, you're dealing with militia in this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, absolute legit militia.
Yeah. And one of his newer books he's doing is Robotech.
Mm-hmm. That's totally different.
He's going to be doing a Robotech comic book, which is crazy.
Well, and he also wrote, before Marvel bought Star Wars, he was writing the last run on Star Wars. Yep. That was right before... before Disney bought Star Wars. Not Marvel. Yeah. And it so came to Marvel.
When Dark Horse lost
it. Yeah, when Dark Horse lost it, he was finishing up his run on that.
Yeah.
So he wrote Star Wars for 2.5 years or some crazy shit.
Yeah, he also wrote 25 issues of Conan the Barbarian as well with Becky Cloonan.
Oh, wow. I actually really liked his run.
That was a cool run.
Oh, that sounds like a good run.
But he's also done Aliens. He's also done, like, he's done some bigger properties. And maybe it's stuff you didn't realize.
He's done X-Men.
Did X-Men for a while.
He did X-Men.
It was the female X-Men team.
I read that one.
He did some X-Men.
And Demo was originally, and Deviate were originally supposed to be, well, Deviate was a takeoff of old Wildstorm property, but Demo was supposed to be, to me, it was his original take on what the X-Men were going to be.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, and Local is just a genius story because you're following a girl.
Which one's
through,
Local?
Through 12 years. So it's a 12-issue run.
Oh, you've told me about this one, right.
And each one is a different focal point in this girl's life.
Of her life, right.
So one of the best issues I read in there, I think, was the third or fourth issue where she ends up at this diner and these two brothers are in a standoff getting ready to kill each other and they have everybody in the diner hostage and the girl happens to be one of them. So she just ends up in this scene. But the whole issue is about what happens in there when she's in that spot.
It's like if you're going reminiscing through your own past, but it's a little girl.
And it's key points in your own past.
In your life, right.
One of the other issues is about a girl that's trying to basically assume her identity because she wants to be her so bad. So she starts stealing her shit and stuff like that. It's crazy.
Wow.
Like, it's such a different story.
Brian Wood is really good at just research and putting you into a story and keeping those stories so separate. Brian Wood's one of the ones that's hard to like follow. Artists, writers can have a voice. You can see a piece and be like, oh, that's blank. And I feel
he's
like
so completely
Brian
diverse,
would be hard to do that with.
Yeah.
Well, I've been since, because we had him out in Colorado here for Comic Fest.
Yeah.
And it was one of the coolest nights we got to hang out with. We hung out with him for three hours.
Was that Brian?
That was pre.
That was that story that you guys told me. Oh, wow.
The one with the dolphins and Jason and stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
So it was like 12 of us and we sat around and just hung out and drank and ate.
That's
and
awesome.
BS'd with Brian Wood for like 3 hours.
That's a lot of genius in that dude, man.
Yeah.
So we talked with him so long that when I went to Comics Pro, not this past year, but the year before, because he lives in Portland and that's where it was being held, they actually, Dark Horse brought him down. And that's because that's when he was just introducing Rebels.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, hey, Brian, I don't think you remember me. And he's like, oh, I totally remember you. And I'm pretty sure it's because of the interesting conversations we had.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's seared in his mind for all time.
Right. Yeah, well, we got into some colorful stuff. It was fun.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So. All right, well, let's move into, I kind of want to do Rick Remender.
Yeah, we should do.
I really like him.
Yeah, we're...
I really like
Rick Remender. He started off as a colorist, if I remember correctly, and he did stuff for years and years.
He's done so many different stories; it's not even funny.
Yeah, he did. Was it Strange Girl?
Mm-hmm.
That was one.
I'm such a loser. All these guys are like right around my age, and all I've done is open a comic book store.
You helped. Bring this.
I feel like such a loser. I'm looking at these guys' ages and like, Remender's 44. I'm 42.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I suck.
You don't suck.
So I mean, he's done. You know, he started off back.
He's done a lot of work for Image.
Yeah, a lot of stuff for Image.
To name a few, he's done Deadly Class. He's done Black Science. He's done Low. His big works for Marvel were Uncanny Avengers. He's done Uncanny X-Force,
which is one of the best X-Men runs of all time.
Yeah, we've
holy
talked
amazing.
About that story a lot.
You know, he got also in the mid 2000s with the big one that I think when you talk about him is a Fear Agent.
I love Fear Agent.
Tony Moore,
awesome sci-fi
Jerome
Pena,
and Francesco Francavilla.
Well, and the whole thing he did behind that was he was trying to do what if you had 50s sci-fi happening now, basically? So the big globe heads with all the crazy, wacky, zany monsters and all that kind of stuff. It is just, it was so good.
Really good
stuff.
It was
so much fun.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, his big thing now is Seven to Eternity.
A little book called Seven to Eternity.
Big, yeah. But he's still doing awesome.
He's Black Science, Low, Tokyo Ghost.
Tokyo Ghost.
Yeah, I think you like that one.
I really like Tokyo Ghost.
See, and I love Deadly Class. If you haven't read that, that book is awesome.
I don't think I have.
It blew me away because when you get to the current issues, the last few issues, he completely changed the direction of the story. He did like a freshman year in college, and then when he moved into the sophomore year, the things that happened that wrap up the freshman year changed the entire dynamic of the comic book.
Wow.
Kind of like The Wake.
Right.
It's kind of like that, where in the middle of the story, it changes absolute directions, and you were just like, holy, what the?
So, because we're running out of time, I'm going to burn through Snyder, since you mentioned Wake. Scott Snyder started new, really great Batman art run with Greg Capullo, obviously, has slipped into All-Star Batman and is moving
into
Deadpool.
It's been in Batman mythos from...
Yeah, he originally started... The thing that got him started was that he sold a book of short stories.
He's the only one that took it seriously.
Said, hey, I want to do some comic book work, and he was able to pitch to Vertigo Comics American Vampire. He was friends with Stephen King.
Hey, King, you want to come write this little comic for me?
Stephen King said, okay, cool. And like I said, I remember when that comic book came out.
Everybody was here for the Stephen King part, but everybody stayed for the Scott Snyder part.
Yeah, but it was one of those things, I remember issue number one, everyone's like, do you have the new Stephen King comic book?
Right.
You know. Mm-hmm. When he really started, I remember reading these monthly when they came out, but he did a run for about a year on Detective Comics with Jock, and those are fantastic. If you've
really
never read
Dark
Mirrors, we'll see about the same time,
Black
though. He was doing Severed as well.
Severed?
Which is a straight-up horror story.
Yeah, you showed me Severed.
Yeah, because it's awesome.
Yeah, so good.
I was like, oh, you like Snyder? Well, you should read this.
That's the thing about Snyder is what I don't think people understand is Scott Snyder is a really good horror writer. I think
he was Witches, right?
Yeah, Witches.
Witches.
And Wake itself has a real eeriness to it.
Definitely does.
It's not like
it's
a horror movie, but you're never comfortable reading it.
He did an awesome run that kind of mentioned earlier on Swamp Thing. Fantastic. You should read that Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely some other offshoot stuff of Scott Snyder's.
I was going to say, if you like the Batman, I think if you're into horror, I think that you want to look up some Scott Snyder books.
Absolutely.
Slip into Mr. Hickman.
Jonathan Hickman, sorry, I'm a little burpy over here. So Jonathan Hickman, from what I remember, his earliest work was Nightly News.
Yeah.
I don't remember if there's something before that. If there is, I apologize. But he started doing like these 4 to 6 issue miniseries for Image.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, when they were coming out, I was like, who is this guy? This
is
so dense and crazy.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was just, like Pax Romana blew me away. Because there are serious pages of entire text that pertain to the story that you have to read. And then he was doing all the art in his early books as well.
He was, yeah.
And he would do these crazy bullet points that would tell you extra information inside the comic while you're reading the comic that would introduce the next issue you were going into.
Right.
So, and this is a guy when I heard him, because we went to Morrison Con. I went to Morrison Con, and he was there. And he was one of the members there. And when he was on stage talking about how he writes, he's like, well, I plan out 5 years in advance. And then I fill in their holes as I'm going.
What?
So he has the idea. He's got the beats already planned out.
Yes.
He just needs to fill in all the meat and potatoes. And sometimes the meat and potatoes for him are seriously heavy things. And he has proven to me that when he's doing bigger, larger scope books, like when he did Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Trying to read that as a monthly, not a good idea. But reading it as a whole piece of work, it's awesome.
Because
there's so much. He really does pay attention to what's going on from the beginning all the way through to the end.
Right.
Like stories, like it reminds me of the writing
of
Breaking Bad.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Where you get the whole. As you're going along, you're like, holy crap, there's all this stuff that happened, and this part that seems inconsequential now might actually mean something in two issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's that much heavy-duty stuff in his work.
The dense enough writing to where when you read the first book, you're actually reading, like, the first paragraph of the first chapter.
Right.
You're not anywhere near the story, where a lot of books, you get the first chapter in your first book, so people catch on quicker on that spec. But for him, Hickman has always been a...
Well, he's
talesman, if you will.
And he's definitely a high concept guy.
Right.
Because this is also the gentleman who wrote the Manhattan Projects, which what if when they were creating the atomic bomb, they accidentally found other realities in other parallel universes? What do you do with that?
What do you do with that?
This is where he expands on that. Yeah. Or you go into something like East to West, where what if death killed all of the other four horsemen, or the other three horsemen, and decided he was going to go get revenge on somebody for taking his child from
East of West, I think, is one of the sleeper favorites of the store.
I love that book.
Everyone here, I think, loves
But the funny thing about that book is I have to kind of go back and reread it from the beginning every time I decide I want to read it.
Right.
Because there's so much stuff going on in there, and it's so dense.
You can't just pick it up.
Yeah. But, I mean, he did the same thing with when he was writing the Avengers. It was a 5-year chunk of life that you had to go, okay, this is actually kind of good, and he's utilizing all these crazy characters, but I'm so lost because I can't, you know, the monthly
right.
on that one was hard to follow, and I think it killed a lot of people because they just didn't want to put that much effort into reading their comic book, which I can understand. But when you read that book as a whole and you can break down all the parts because you're continually reading it, it's such a better read.
Was Hickman part of the one that just came out today, the Deadly... The Dead and Dying?
The Dying and the
Dead.
Yes,
Dying and the Dead.
Isn't that
That was a book that was his, like, passion project.
Right.
That he had to put on hold because he was too busy writing all the big stuff.
Right.
So he put out the first three issues, and then it's been over a year since he put out the last one.
It's been a while, right?
So he just came out with that, and I was surprised to see it. I didn't even know. I was like, holy crap. This came out. Because that was such a cool book. But when he does stuff like that, I mean, he really puts a lot of thought. Like, these are all writers that put an immense amount of thought into whatever work they're working on. They really put themselves into it. They really, really go deep, you know. Yeah. They're really passionate. You can tell the passion behind the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's not just a, hey, I'm doing this for a paycheck. I actually love doing this.
Right.
And it makes me happy doing
it. We glossed over Snyder, but Snyder created the character Bloom and the Court of Owls for Batman.
Yeah.
And Bloom is supposed to be a flower. And he was telling Capullo, the flower's got to look scary. And Capullo was like...
What?
Flowers aren't scary. And he goes, no, dude, they are. And he was sending him pictures days for weeks of flowers, like close-up shots of flowers.
I think it's hilarious that they hated each other when they first started together.
Yeah.
And it almost killed the book.
Yeah.
And then they kind of just figured out how to get along, and now they're like totally good buddies.
Well, he was like,
I love that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Friday night.
So I want you to do this really whacked out thing, and it's going to be awesome. And he's like, what?
Capullo said he told him to go hang out with his family and children because Friday evening he would get pictures of like all these insides of flowers, and he's like, dude, hang out with your children.
It's okay.
I got this. But yeah. Like, he does super amount of like research in the visual aspects and stuff because he has an idea as well. So.
Well, and that's the main reason why we were trying to showcase these.
Absolutely. Check these people
like
out.
Like Snyder, right. Snyder's the one kind of everybody knows on this list. But yeah, he's done other work besides Batman.
Yes.
You know, he's still worth checking out his other work.
Absolutely. Yep. And every single one of them, if you need it, come in the store and name
one. We can
one
wax
and we'll
poetical
go,
yeah, for we'll a while.
For a long time. They're all really great writers.
I've read... Personally, I probably read 90% of all the work that all these people have done.
You named three that I have to go pick up and read now. So, yeah, that's great.
There you go.
Because I have more time to read more comics. So, so
the store's called I Want More Comics, and I have more time to read comics.
That's right. All right, guys. Well, that is the end of 45. We're 5 away from 50.
Yep.
We'll see you then.
All right. Talk to you later.
Peace.
Bye.
Lines converging where you stand, they must have moved the picture plane. The leaves are heavy around your feet, you hear the thunder of the train. Suddenly it strikes you that they're moving into range, and Dr. Strange